I think we're ready to go. Everybody happy we're there? Great Episcopalians sitting in the back. Nobody sits in the front. Yeah, you did. You did a good job. You're near the front. Yeah. You'll learn. You sit in the back. And then you complain that you can't hear. Okay. All right. Well, let me introduce myself real quick before we get started. My name is Christy Leesburg, and you probably saw my little headshot in the program, and it says that I'm the Christian Ed Director at St. John's, and I retired last month, so I'm actually not that anymore. Thank you. But I'm still the chair of the Christian Ed Commission for the Episcopal Diocese of Fort Worth, and I serve on the Catechesis Task Force for ACNA. So, and that's how I ended up here, because I've made connections with various REC people, and so here we are. And I'm a married mom of five, and you'll get to see all of them because they're in my slideshow. You may be looking at your program and thinking, one of these things is not like the others. So I am the only non-priest, non-male speaker in the whole thing. So I hope it won't be too much culture shock for you, shock to your system to be hearing from me. So come on in, and is it good? Yeah, I've got it turned on. Yeah. All right. Come on in, grab a handout if you're a handout kind of person, and we'll get started. Okay, so what I'm going to be talking about today, as you can see from the title, is having a catechetical home. And how do we do that? So let's dive in and find out. First of all, what are we called to be? The Bible tells us to tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord. And the Bible is full throughout with either specific instructions for bringing up children in the faith or the stories of the successes and failures of parents and the weighty consequences. So you can read the Old Testament and watch. Good parenting, bad parenting. Good parenting, bad parenting. And it affects the whole nations, right? Based on the how much people were telling their children about the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, right? So there's no doubt that we are called to be the spiritual educators of our children. Not supposed to pass that off to anyone else or hope that God kind of takes care of that along the way or hope they learn those lessons from life. It's us. And it's a very deep and awesome and wonderful responsibility. So what are we called to do? In Deuteronomy, God gives simple instructions for how to do that. When you sit at home, when you walk along the road, which we translate into the modern ride in the minivan, when you lie down and when you get up. So that's really simple, right? God knew we needed simple, so he made it simple. You just open your mouth and you show what you're doing. We need to make our homes and lives God-centered. No more compartmentalizing. Let's invite God home from church with us. So in our lives right now, we've got church on Sunday, and we keep God in that nice little Sunday box. And then we've got school and sports and work and dinner time and extracurricular activities and entertainment and all of these things that, oh, was God supposed to be there too? Because he's got this little box on Sunday. He needs to be the whole box that we put everything into. So we've got to make our lives actually God-centered, all of our lives. Okay, so where are you going? Are you going from nothing to something on trying to get catechism into your kids? From a little to more? Or from what isn't really working to what will work? So who's got children in the room? Okay, everybody, great. Yesterday I had two parents and I think about 10 young people that weren't even married yet. So it was really awesome that they wanted to be prepared. But it's nice to be able to talk to some moms and dads today too. So do you guys have things going on at home? I don't want to shame anybody just in case you're the nothing to something crowd. So yeah, a couple of nods. Yeah. So today what we're going to do, work with you, is, you know, go from little to more, or to help out with things that aren't working to moving into things that are working. So we got our little treasure map on the bottom there. Okay, so this is my family. And as I was thinking through, okay, how do you deal with this age and this age and this age, I realized for every age there was, I've got one of those in stock. I have a baby, I have a preschooler, I have an elementary school kid, I have a junior high schooler, and I have a high schooler. So I've got one for every category, and you can see they all look like dads. So I contributed nothing to their genetic makeup. They're all little clones of dads. So. The one in the middle, that one's mine. Michael, that's the only, the little guy in the, not the baby in the middle, but the, yeah. That's my side of the family, so he's got a little bit of mine. Yes, that's true. This is Easter morning, so that's why everybody looks so nice and put together. And also why the boys are all standing around looking like that with this "can we get the picture over with" face. Especially like David on the bottom. Seriously? Another picture? Okay, so we'll go through each of the age range, and we'll start with the little guys and work our way up to the big guys, and you can see how you can build on what you're doing working with them. Okay, so the least of these, the 0 to 2 set, the babies. Who has babies? I know you guys do. Everybody has babies. Yay! All right. I have babies. I always have babies at one time or another. Okay, so you may be thinking, what can I do with my baby? It's a baby. So it's all about observation and just taking it all in for babies. So start praying around your baby out loud. So the things you're saying inside your head when you're praying, say them out loud so the baby hears them. Sing hymns, church camp songs, Sunday school songs as lullabies in the soundtrack of your life. So instead of, you know, singing pop music in the kitchen while you're doing the dishes, you can be singing a hymn or Jesus Loves You, things like that, that are, you know, much more fruitful for your kids to hear. Okay, and let your religious practices be a part of the rhythm of your baby's life. So you guys are here, some of you brought your kids along, and you know, it's wonderful for them to be a part of all that. Bring your baby along when you go to church or other religious events. People get wound up about having babies in church, oh, they'll be too noisy, and you're usually a lot more self-conscious about how much noise that child is making than anybody around you. There is going to be a 150-year-old woman somewhere in the congregation that's making that face. You should keep that child quiet, because we've come from a very children should be seen and not heard, and preferably not seen either, kind of thinking. And church is for babies too. And if they're not making it to where nobody can hear anything, they're fine. Bring your child. Now, I say that not being a hypocrite, because my child is a howler monkey. So he goes to the nursery, my little Ben. This is Ben, my little 1-year-old. So he's our sample child for this age range. And what we've done with our kids is to just, when we tuck them in at night, we say the Lord's Prayer with them from the very beginning. So they've just heard this every day, which leads us into our next age group. Anybody have questions about babies? Okay. We all seem to understand babies. All right, the pre-K bunch, the 3 to 5-year-old age. This one is almost 4 years old. This is David. And at this age, they're really great for memorizing rote facts. Okay, before the age of 6, the human brain is most capable of learning and memorizing new facts. So this is why they tell you if you're going to learn a new language, do it before you turn 6, because you're never going to have the same kind of plasticity in your brain to learn a foreign language. So this is just their sponges, and they can just soak up so much information and remember so many things. We had with our what is now 14-year-old, when he was little, we taught him all the books of the Bible, the Greek alphabet, how to count to 10 in, I think, 5 or 6 different foreign languages, all this stuff that, you know, sounds really impressive, but it's just he had that memory, and they all have that. So start doing rote memorization of facts now, and your child will be a font of information and lots of fun to show off at gatherings. It's cool when you can come here and say, count to 10 in Hindi. People are like, wow, that's really cool. So, in fact, we had, for the next point, memorizing books of the Bible, tribes of Israel, rote prayers, things out of the prayer book, kings of Israel, creeds, service prayers, and all of this is extremely easy for kids this age. My husband taught the junior high class for Sunday school and was trying to get them to learn the books of the Bible. You know, here were these, you know, 11, 12-year-old kids. They didn't even know Genesis was the first one, you know. So we kept trying to get them to learn it, and they wouldn't learn it. And so he brought the then 3-year-old up and said, hit it. And here goes this 3-year-old, and he hit Genesis through zebras, which is Hebrews for 3-year-old. So, and he got all the way through Hebrews before he faltered. But all of these junior high kids were like, how can he do all of those? So, you know, they can do it. And they're also good for parties and, you know, entertainment purposes. It's really easy for him. And you know that baby he said the Lord's Prayer to every night since the day he was born? Guess what he can say on his own now? And it starts out with just the little sounds, the little phonemes that are in there. They're not saying the correct words, but they'll make the little bits of sound with you. And then it starts to connect into words, and then all of a sudden they're saying the whole thing. So this little guy, I was going to record it and have it for this, of this little guy saying the Lord's Prayer. And he's been saying it probably since he was like 2 and a half or so. And whenever we go anywhere where people are praying and he pipes up and he's doing the Lord's Prayer, everybody, wow. Little guy's doing it. Yeah, he's heard it every day. And so it's super easy. That's not, you know, a lot of effort to have to do that. Preschoolers love to be a part of big people things. Including them in your prayer time is something they will be excited about. So start with Grace Before Meals. It's a great place. So it's a small prayer. The first thing they're going to be able to say in that prayer is, what do you think? Amen, right? That's the thing. It's the punchline at the end, and so you'll be, you know, God is great, God is good, let us thank Him for our food. Amen! So they get excited with that, and then they start adding in the rest of it. And with our kids, if you get started and they haven't started praying with you, you have to stop and start all over again because they want to be a part of it so badly. So they want to be included. They want to learn all this stuff. They get excited when you're excited about what they're saying or doing. So this is the time to get all that stuff in there. And then, you know, if they've memorized the books of the Bible, they're not going to be sitting in that junior high class going, what are the four Gospels again? So they'll have it and they'll be ready to go, and it'll be handy for life because, you know, my Bible has tabs on it. I wish I could just flip open to Ephesians and find it, but I'm like, okay, it's Galatians and then wait. So I need the tabs, but maybe the 14-year-old won't. He lost that knowledge between 3 and 14 because we just had confirmation and he had to know the books of the Bible, so we had to re-memorize them. But we had some pretty funny mnemonics to help us do that. So, okay, any questions about that age range? Awesome. All right, the elementary set, the 6 to 10-year-old range. That's my 8-year-old. That's Michael, the one that actually looks sort of like me. And this age is very eager to learn and participate. They just want to do everything. They want to be big enough to do everything. This is the age range also where kids have natural curiosity about everything that is going on around them. I've been talking with people that the tradition in the REC might be different about when they receive First Communion, that they receive it much younger. Yeah. If there's preparation at all for us, it's like around the first and second grade age, so that's why I put it in this section. But even if your child's been receiving communion since they got baptized as a wee one, they will reach a point where they're ready to learn about what they're doing. So even if you don't have that formal preparation time or that formal first communion moment, you can hit that, you know, second grade range is a good time to start and say, hey, this is what we're doing during the service. This is why we say and do these things. And this is what's happening at the altar before you go up there for communion. So this is what you're receiving. And they can, you know, really be more informed about what they're taking part in. So you can prepare them for First Communion or go back and make sure they understand what they've been doing. Encourage them to look around at what is happening during the service. Answer questions when they come up, because they're not going to remember when they get home to say, what was the priest doing at the altar that one time? Why does that stained glass window have a chicken in it? You know, there's these questions that come up there. They're not going to come up again. So encourage your children that it's okay to whisper for a little bit in church if they have a question. And how you get around people being upset with you for talking in church is you point while you're giving the answer. Okay, so you point at the stained glass window or you point at the priest and they're like, oh, it's a teaching moment. This also works if they lean over and ask you if they can go to the bathroom for the sixth time and you're explaining to them, no, you can't go to the bathroom for the sixth time because you've been six times, so cut it out. And you're pointing at the stained glass window the entire time, so people think, oh, they're having a teaching moment, not a disciplinary moment. You can hide things. It's good. So we always, you know, let them ask questions during church, and sometimes even ask them questions. What do you think's happening up there? Why'd they say that? Why'd they do that? What's that bell for? So, to pique their curiosity. Yes, ma'am.
Make curiosity about how do you, having that many children and having all these little teaching moments and questions about going to the bathroom, how do you keep your mind on worship?
Okay, I'm going to repeat the question for the recording. She wants to know, how do you keep your mind on worship when you have all these various interruptions from the kids that are curious about what's going on? And parenting in the pew is, I think, what you're asking about. I'm going to say that it's not always easy to stay focused on the worship, but I'm going to encourage you that it's your duty of state. And duty of state refers to that what you're doing is sometimes more important than being completely and fully engaged in the worship, because you are catechizing your children. You're raising your children in the pew, and that's, you know, that's your God-given gift for your children, and God appreciates that, and that is a form of worship too. So even though you're not getting to participate in the traditional way in the Mass by paying attention and really taking in all the sights and sounds and everything that's supposed to be affecting you, you're still having that worship moment of, this is important enough to me that I want my children to have it. So just understand, as a mother, that you look up duty of state when you get home, and you will be encouraged. Yes, ma'am.
I think it encourages you to think about how to explain things. Because sometimes you do things and you understood them at first, especially if you came into the tradition, but then after a while, it's like, kind of start doing it.
Okay, I'm going to repeat that again. Okay, an audience member has said that it also helps you understand what you're doing when you're showing it to your children, because you may have gotten so used to doing it that you've forgotten the whys. So explaining it to another person helps you remember, we do this because it's important and here's the reason why. So it's a nice little pump up to our own faith and practices too. Why do I have that piety? Okay, so also expect participation in the service. We have become a coloring book congregation, right? Where we put the coloring book down with the kids, and that's what they do the whole time they're in the church. And that's an appropriate thing for the very young, because they can't engage, you know, that young in things. But we see the coloring books and the other things that they've brought to keep busy, toys and little things, going on and on and on up into ages where they can be participating in the service, you know, and you're missing out on a great moment. So this age, from kindergarten on, my kids used to go to Catholic school, and we were told, you know, ahead of time in kindergarten, your child needs to be able to sit all the way through Mass and not have to go to the bathroom and not have to be entertained. And I thought, okay, we better be ready for that. That's 5 years old, you know, and that's what they were expecting. And, you know, we found that it was not an unreasonable expectation. So by 5 years old, your child should be able to sit through the service without entertainment. Now, I have one caveat for that. The sermon, some of the adults aren't understanding this sermon, so we're not going to blame the five-year-old for zoning out for that part. So if you want to do a little coloring book or something in that, that's an understandable thing. But the rest of it is, you know, it's not a spectator sport. You know, we've got church aerobics going on, and the kids can definitely participate in that. So as I said here, early elementary can be doing the right things with their bodies, while the older elementary can add in doing the right things with their mouths. So we start with, when we're standing, sitting, and kneeling, the little guys are standing, sitting, and kneeling. So there's no more crouching over the coloring book the whole time. They're up and down, just like we are. And they're crossing themselves, and they're genuflecting, and they're crossing themselves at the gospel, and they're bowing their head at the name of Jesus, and whatever personal piety you have that you practice during the church service, you pass that on to your kids. And so you have that expectation that physically you're doing what you're supposed to with your body. And later on, it'll be what you're supposed to do with your mouth. And it's going to start off with the simple amen, right? And then work up to, they can say the Lord's Prayer. If they're 3 and they know it, they can say it when they're 5 and they're 10 and et cetera. So they can participate in that. You know, and then by the time they reach a certain age, there's not anything in the service they can't do with you. So you can start having, you know, those higher expectations for that. Okay, any more questions about elementary?
Hi.
Yes.
My husband is a minister, so he's up, so it's just me and the 3, so I'm significantly outnumbered. We have a 6, just turned 5, and almost 2, and I'm having a hard time expecting the 6-year-old to participate, which I know he can, while I'm trying to keep 2-year-old from running up the front pew to get up to her dad. So, any great advice?
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially especially when the kids have an understanding that they know what's going on in the service and they really should be able to participate. I've got two versions. I've got a shorter version and a longer version for the different age groups. And depending on how mature your six-year-old is, let's see where the other one is. I'll have to find it. I have a behavior chart. Okay. So I do. I like charts. So what this shows, and this is mentioned later on in the slideshow, but we'll just skip it when it comes because I want to answer your question while you're thinking about it. But I've got part of the mass, a sample text. So if you don't happen to know the Sursum Corda is this part of the service, because why would you? It's not written anywhere in the prayer book, but you're supposed to know Sursum Corda, right? So it's got the first few words of that section. Was my body doing the right thing? And then a list of what posture they're supposed to be in. Stand, kneel, sit, stand, kneel. Check mark, check mark, check mark, check mark. Piety, what they're, cross yourself, bow and cross, bow three crosses at the gospel, shake hands at the peace. Lots of bowing. There's all kinds of bowing in there. So all the things you can do with your body. Then, was my mouth doing the right thing? Sing, say, or silent? Sing, silent, then respond. Silent, then for like the collect for purity. You're going to listen, and then at the end you say amen. So silent, then respond. Sing, sing, say, silent. Silent, sing, say. Silent, sometimes respond. So there's all these different things on front and back. This one is for an older child. It breaks down every little thing in the service. And I have one that's one page for a younger child that is bigger chunks of the service at a time. But what this does is it allows you and your child to see, what am I supposed to be doing, and am I doing a good job at that? And I'm not above bribery. Bribery works. Let's just say it. Bribery works. So if you've got X number of check marks on your list by the end of the service, you get a treat. You get an extra donut. You get a quarter. You get some M&Ms. You get to play longer with your friends at church. We'll stay 15 minutes extra so you can play. Whatever the reward is, free is always good. Extra TV time, computer time, whatever, as a reward for this. And then they're very vested in whether they're getting check marks or not. And they can also kind of help monitor their own behavior, because you juggling the checklist and the two-year-old is going to be a little challenging. But if you've got this on a little clipboard in the pew and you're sitting next to them, you can, they're going to be ready with that pencil and, do I get a check mark? Sorry, you don't. Like, oh, man, I got to do better. What's the next thing I need to do? Okay, I'm going to stand and I'm going to sing. So, it helps them to really be in charge of their own behavior and motivated to, instead of be good, it's do this and this and this. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. We did that because we were having trouble. At the end of the day, we'd say, you had a really terrible day in church. And my son would say, but I did this and this and this. I'd say, yeah, but you also didn't do this, this, and this. But I did this, but you didn't do that. And, because the bad behavior is far more memorable than when they're doing the right thing. So we did the list so that we could say, oh, well, out of the 30 check marks, you got 20. So I guess you had a better day than I thought you did. And we'll give you a little more credit for that. So it's handy for that. It gives you perspective, too. And you can look on there and decide, okay, it's ridiculous to expect, or it's, she really should be expecting more of this. You can gauge it for your child's ability. And it's always tough when the parent is the priest, because it's a different experience. Dad's right up there, and it's a challenge, I'm sure. And not be able to, because you've gone from man-to-man to zone defense with your age group, or your number of children. And we had to stop singing in the choir, because we had five, and we have to arrange ourselves. Three of them are in church at any given time, so it's child, adult, child, adult, child. When David's ready to come in, which is going to be soon, we're going to be having to rework where we're sitting. So, because everybody's got cooties. Even all the way up to the 14-year-old thinks everybody else has cooties. So we have to, we have to sit between everybody. All right. Any other elementary questions? All right, the junior high tween years. Nobody likes this time. They don't even like this time. But this is my daughter Emma, my only girl. She is right smack in the middle of that. She's 12 years old. So some of these children may be preparing for confirmation. Now, I understand that can also happen at a much younger age in the REC. So again, if it's happened much younger, you can still kind of go through the motions of what you would do for confirmation preparation in a child at this age range. And there's no reason to let the church handle their preparation. That the church offers this is great, but how much richer would your spiritual life with your children be if you were the primary source, and the church was backing you up? So this is a really good and challenging time for parents to really figure out what they believe and how you're going to transmit that to your children. And if you get to the why do you believe that question and you're not sure, you need to figure it out so you can be able to tell them. Your child is about to choose to make a serious commitment. It's a great time to have those deep conversations that explore their and your faith. So ask your children what they believe and why. And let them know, as in our faith, this is what our church believes. And this is what I personally believe. And this is where I hope you will be. Let me help you get there. And if you have questions, if you have doubts, let's talk through that stuff. Because at this age, this is where kids become functionally atheist. They are transitioning from, yes, pour all that information into my head from the grammar years in their elementary years, to actually having to move on to the logic and rhetoric stages where they're figuring out what to do with that information. And a lot of kids never make that jump. So this is the time to get them to start thinking about that. And this is your spiritual heritage and the only inheritance that really matters. Okay? Any junior high questions? Do we have anybody with... Am I beating you by having junior high kids? Has everybody got littles? I know you've got a spread.
Yeah.
Okay, this is my oldest child, Alex, and he is about to be 15. So he's on that high school runway. Okay. During these years, you're preparing your children for life, including eternal life. And you will be helping to equip your child to go out into the world and be a Christian on their own. Okay, so up until now, they've been going with you to church, to your church. Okay. It's not really necessarily been their church. It's just been the place they go to with their parents. Okay. And this is where we have problems with losing kids later, because they go off to college and they don't have a sense of it being theirs. And they don't go looking for it in their new location because they have made it external to them. So most children will leave the nest in some way after graduation, and the statistics on whether they stay in the church after this are bleak. It's like 80-90% of kids leave and never come back. Okay, so that's terrifying. We are not preparing our children to go out into the world and be Christians out there without us. They don't have their own personal Christian identity. And when they get out there into the world that is not Christian friendly, they get challenged and they get beat up, and it's not worth it to them. They weren't that connected to it to begin with. It's not that important to them, and they're getting picked on now. So why hang on to that? It's not cool to be Christian. It's not cool to be countercultural. Well, it is in some things, but not in the good way. So what we have to do is prepare kids for that. Have the hard discussions. Challenge them to learn apologetics. They need to be able to defend their faith. When their friends at college come up to them and say, it's dumb that you're a Christian because I heard, I don't know anything personally because I've never studied it, but I heard Jesus said this, and I heard that this didn't even exist, and they'll challenge your kids. And they need the ammunition to fight back on that. They need to be able to be proud of what they believe. And you need to give them stakes to hold down their faith by encouraging worship, prayer, service, study, evangelism, and stewardship. And how many of us as parents are hitting all six of these areas with this age group? Are we reminding our kids that they need to have good stewardship? Are we making sure that they have opportunities for service? Are we encouraging them to find their own opportunities for service, to get passionate about something? Or do they have their own prayer life? Okay. Most teen kids don't have any kind of daily prayer life. They don't have a regular thing that they do outside of Sunday because we've compartmentalized. God's on Sunday. The rest of the time, I'm a high school kid, and I'm trying to think of everything I can get away with. So they don't necessarily have that spiritual component. And encourage, and by encourage, I mean doing. So don't tell your kids about stewardship, do it. Don't tell your kids about service, do it. Well, you can tell them, but also do it. So all of this leads to, if there's no roots, there's no fruits, right? We've got to make it to where they're really solid in their Christianity before they go off and they don't have us to be that support network for them when they're off on their own. Okay, so that's all of the ages and stages. And you may be wondering, how do I fit God into our daily lives? So if you've been suffering from that compartmentalization, how can you do that? First of all, pray. Ask God to guide you to what will work for your family. Determine where you are in the cycle. If you're starting out, you're trying to beef it up, if you're turning what isn't working into something that does. And remember that it has to be deliberate, not where it will fit, because it will never fit. So my little drawing down there for how do I fit God into our lives is butter and a crowbar. So you have to fit it in. I mean, think about the last time you started that great exercise regime, right? You were going to work out 5 times a week. Okay, 5's not realistic. Let's 3 every other so we can, you know, rest our muscles. 3 is good. 2 is kind of going to be better for me because I'm kind of busy. 1, once a week. I mean, if I'm doing that, I'm doing a good job, right? Once a week. And I will definitely start on that next week or the week after, possibly after Christmas. Never. So that's how we do God, too. We say we're going to do all these great things and we're going to have that great prayer life and we're going to add in all those things. We know that person that gets up an hour before their kids to pray every day and how awesome it makes their life, and we want to do that too, and it didn't quite happen. So we do have to make it deliberate. You do have to figure out how to make it work with your family's time. So starting with strategies, first of all, you and your spouse. Make sure that you and your spouse are both on board and a united front. Everybody needs to be on board. Dad should be the spiritual head of the household. We need to acknowledge that and empower our fathers to do that because they've been told they can't do anything right. They're useless in the home. They're idiots. Do you watch TV? Do you see how men are portrayed on TV? Men can't do anything with the kids. If your life is a sitcom, every 30 minutes of your life is trying to figure out how to fix the thing your goofy husband screwed up, right? That would be your situational comedy life. Every 30 minutes, right? So we're not telling our men that they can do this. So we need to encourage them and empower them and let them be the spiritual heads. But mom is still the heart, and that's scriptural. That means that you work as a team. If your spouse is not on board, you can still proceed as long as you do it in such a way that is not antagonizing to your spouse. So if you've got a situation where you've got different denominations married, or a faithful spouse and I don't want to say unfaithful spouse, that's not the right direction I want to go with that, a non-believing spouse, then it can get a little dicey trying to do this because there may not be the support for it. Or there may be I don't really want you to load the kids up on your denomination too much because I really care about mine too, and you know, you're going to undermine my denomination. So you want your faith, you do not want your faith to be the thing your children connect with discord. So do it in a way that doesn't gig the spouse, you know. Try to plan your spiritual activity around what will be most comfortable for both of you and your spouse, and be ready to compromise and let the other person lead things that aren't your favorite. My husband is really into morning and evening prayer, and so he leads that because it's not my favorite thing. So if it was left up to me, I would find excuses not to do it. We'd be after Christmas. Never. So he's the person that's in charge of that. And then when it comes to doing little object lessons where there's, you know, an activity, mom's better at that, so I do that. And, you know, and other things we come together for and do as a team. And you just play to your strengths. Okay, now smoothing the way as you get started. Getting started is challenging. And even adding in is challenging. So the list of things that I'm going to give you today is something that it will take a little bit of work to work it into what you're already doing. You may find that you have to find the right time, frequency, length, activities, leader, and style. And this takes time. And you're going to have to, you know, tweak it. Trial and error is okay. Parent failure is not the end. In fact, if you're having a really hard time with it and it's going horribly, you're doing it right. Okay? Because number one, The devil does not want you to succeed. This is his greatest fear, is a family that is catechizing at home. A family that is really locked into focusing on God. Worst nightmare for Satan. So he's going to step in and he is going to push cranky toddlers and overload of homework and a spouse that has to work late and a teenager that just can't be bothered to do anything and all of the difficulties of life that look like your family is the problem is Satan pushing those things at you all at once. And it breaks down and falls apart at first and you think this isn't working and we are not good at this and we were not meant to do this. And that's not true. So just keep going. If it's going badly, you're doing it right and you will get over that hump. So anything you've done, we heard yesterday Bishop Sutton talk about it takes 21 days to establish a new habit. This is the same thing. So a little bit at a time is better than trying to drink from the fire hose. I'm about to give you the fire hose. So do not look at the list that I'm going to give you of stuff that you can try as the Leesburg home list of everything that we are doing right now, because we are not. This is absolutely everything I could think of that were ideas for you to start you. They are not, it's not the whole list of everything you should be doing all the time. It's a menu to choose from. So don't drink from the fire hose. Even if you're super excited about 15 different ideas that you get today, try them one at a time. You know, see what works, and then add in the next thing and do it that way. So your needs will change as your children grow, obviously. And for many different reasons, what worked great last year will need an overhaul this year because nothing lasts forever. So you may find that, you know, you started off doing a once-a-week object lesson with the kids with a fun activity, and it was going great, and then towards the end of the year, the kids are kind of meh, and you're kind of, I got to do that again. You can move on to the next fun thing, the next interesting thing, the next spiritual thing. And you don't have to worry about things that lose their sparkle. Okay, and what sounds so great happening in somebody else's house may not work for you, and that's okay. How many of you know somebody and they're doing something in their household that you're like, man, I wish we could do that? Anybody? Okay. Two people raised their hands, but the rest of you were thinking it. In some way you were thinking it. Either that or you're just so much better than your friends, and they're all thinking it about you.
No, so.
Okay, so this is what I'm going to say, and this is the thing you need to know most of all, is seriously, don't compare yourself. Because the reason we struggle with insecurity is because we compare our behind the scenes with everyone else's highlight reel. So that thing that looks like it is so awesome and wonderful that's happening in somebody else's house does not look that great all the time. They have their struggles. They don't do it 100% of the time either. You know, so don't compare yourself and don't think that your household is not holy enough because you don't do the cool thing that your friend or your neighbor does. Okay? All right, so here we go. Are you ready? Rapid fire ideas, and I've got like 10 minutes to give them to you, so I'm going to use my ability, having been born in Chicago, to speak quickly, to blow through it, so hold on to your seats. All right, so this, I've got 4 slides of free stuff and 1 slide of stuff that costs money. All right, the daily office is available to use with your family. Adjust for length as needed with your situation. Use family devotions. Make up your own daily liturgy, but don't be weird. Don't get weird. You want to stay within, use the traditional pieces in a way that works for your family. Don't make up new pieces. So we talked about today, Bishop Ackerman talked about you need to keep, the liturgy needs to be the good stuff translated through every age, right? Okay, prepare your child for religious lessons they will be getting outside your home. Read pertinent Bible stories ahead of time and discuss the lesson. If your Sunday school doesn't tell you what they're going to cover, ask. Some churches even put it in the bulletin. This is what we're going to be doing in Sunday school next week. And if they don't, you can mention it to your Christian ed director. I sure would like to know, you know, what the next 4 lessons are going to be about so I can prepare my kids. And she or he will be stunned that you want to know that and want to, you know. And the Sunday school teacher will be like, wow, your child knew the Bible story before we read it today. They were all excited about it. It's really cool for them to be able to participate at that level. Follow up on Sunday school and VBS lessons when they return home. In the car on the way home is great because by the time you get home, the last few little cells of remembering any of that are gone. And if you ask them later, they'll say, I don't know, it was something with Jesus, I think. You know, Jesus is always a good guess if you're asking about what is Sunday school about. Share your personal experiences of your faith with your children. They should know what you believe and why. Listen to Christian music in the car. Our local station here is 94.9. There's some AM stations for Christian talk radio. 910 is one of them, although it's got spotty reception. Just depends on where you are, whether you can hear it. And ask your Christian ed director or Sunday school teacher for use Sunday school in VBS curricula so you can use it at home for ideas. Okay? There's always stuff sitting around at church. More free opportunities. Pray whenever anything comes up, good or bad. This invites God into your everyday. Mean kids at school, pray for them. Boo-boos, pray for healing. Even the silly little stuff. Remember that God knows the number of the hairs on your head, so nothing is too trivial. And that was in our reading last night at Evensong. I thought, wow, thank you, God. Achievement, thank God for your gifts and blessings. Good luck, thank God for his blessing. Thank God for your gifts and talents, and thank God for your blessings. Pray when external opportunities arise, like emergency vehicles seen on the road, hospital helicopter overhead, terrible news on the TV or radio, which we've had lately. Study up on areas in the world in which missionary work and or religious persecution are happening. I have a website at the end of this slide deck to show you where you can look up that kind of information. Make God a normal part of everything. Your faith should never be out of place or an intrusion on the rest of your life. It should just be your life. Did you raise your hand by chance? No, okay. The corner of my eye, I saw a movement. I thought, I don't want to miss somebody raising their hand. Okay. Still more free stuff. Use time. I didn't go in and change this. This is not supposed to be bolded right there, so just ignore that. Use times when you have a captive audience to the fullest. When your kids are stuck with you, milk it for all it is worth. In the car, you can pray, read the Bible, ask religious trivia questions, play fun games with a religious flavor, like cheese, concentration, 20 questions, and church and religious symbol bingo. And you may be asking, what is cheese? Okay, nobody knows the game cheese. It's an alphabet game, and you go around through the people that you're with, and so for the letter A, we're going to come up with names in the Bible. So we'll do that until we exhaust it, you know, Aaron, Adam, and so on, until nobody can think of another A one. And then you go to B, and then you go to C, all the way through the alphabet. And it keeps everybody busy, everybody thinking about, okay, Bible names, Bible places, special events, saints. You can do, there's all kinds of Christian ABC things that you can do. Concentration, you know how to play that one? No? Man, all these youngins. Okay. Concentration is also a game where you're listing things out, but you have to remember what everybody said before you. So if we did the Bible names game, and you wouldn't have to do it alphabetically necessarily, but you can. That's another twist on it. I would say Adam, and you would say Adam and Bethlehem, and you would say Adam, Bethlehem, Christ, and you would say Adam, Bethlehem, Daniel, and you go all the way through. That's concentration. Is that, do you remember in that one now? Okay, yeah. So, okay, and there's other times that you're stuck together, right? Pediatrician, dentist, orthodontist, waiting room, usually for a long time, before a movie starts, sitting in the theater, waiting in lines, okay? And you may be nervous about talking about Jesus out in public because people are going to look at you, big Jesus freak over there talking about Jesus in the pediatrician waiting room. But remember, you can get a twofer on having that conversation with your child because you may be catechizing a child and evangelizing somebody in the waiting room or in the line with you or whatever. And what else would you rather them overhear you talking about? Right? Okay, so it's a good opportunity. Include your children in outreach projects. If they can't come along to do outreach on site, they can help count out or package supplies, create artwork to advertise for a collection or ministry, make items to give like cards and greetings, come along to purchase needed items, and of course they can pray. You can ask them, we're going to be working at Ronald McDonald House, can you pray for us? And you pray for all of the families that we're going to be serving at Ronald McDonald House. On site, your children can do a lot more than you might think. Even if they aren't able to help that much, they can see you doing something for others and understand it to be a natural outpouring of your faith. Also, they're cute and uplifting to others. My husband is the chair of the outreach commission for our parish, and he always brings one or so of our children, depending on, you know, what the activity is and whether they allow children. We don't take the little ones to the night shelter because we're not allowed to. But we do work over at the Fort Worth Pregnancy Center, and they have a big outdoor cleanup and refurbishment each year, and the kids can go over, they can pick up trash in the parking lot, they can wash windows, they can do all kinds of things, and mostly they can look real cute while they're doing it, and it makes everybody that's there happy. You know, the people like to see little faces at that, so it is uplifting. This is one of my favorites. Create a sermon scavenger hunt or sermon bingo for younger kids. This requires you to look up the readings for the day to give you some ideas of words that will likely come up in the sermon, but you should also pick a few obvious choices that would be in any sermon. So, okay, great, thank you. I got a little extra time, yay. Okay, so how that's going to work is you're going to make a list of words: Jesus, God, faith, forgiveness. If the gospel reading is something odd, like feeding the 5,000 fish, feed, things like that, things that are going to come up in the sermon, and the kids have put a tick mark next to every time they hear that word. So what are they doing when they are doing that? They're listening to the sermon. Was your kid listening to the sermon before? Unlikely. There are adults that aren't listening to the sermon, and the kids are kind of like, oh, adults talking, and they're off doing their own thing. They don't, you know, necessarily listen. So if you want to get rid of that coloring book, do the scavenger hunt, and then they'll actually be able to tell you kind of what the sermon was about. Okay, so our last slide of free stuff: read the Bible to your kids at a set time of day. Every day. Once they can read, take turns. Now, I want to show you, this is just the most awesome thing of all time. This is the Children's Everyday Bible, and you can see ours is really beat up, and this is our second copy, because the first one we duct taped together, and it really fell apart even after the duct tape. There's our whole family written in the front. This we keep in the car. And it gets stepped on and slided under the seat and thrown at siblings and everything else. So they don't last long. You have to buy more than one. But it lives in the car. And it has a reading. Like there, I opened it up to June 4th, and that's the reading, and it's got a really colorful, interesting picture. It's short, and it's engaging, and anybody that's probably end of first grade, but definitely in second grade, can read this and on up. And, you know, the 14-year-old doesn't mind reading that. It's nice and short. So we keep it in the car, and when we're on our way places, we crack open the Bible and read the reading for that day. Captive audience. Gotta go for it. It's also a great one to have at home. It's just the one we happen to keep in the car. So for kids still learning how to participate in the service, have a checklist that shows them what they should be doing. And we discussed that a little bit earlier. Be committed to attending church every Sunday. If other things can come before church, what message are we sending? Okay, we're a homeschooling family as well, on top of all of that. and we've been working our way through a catechism book this year, and we got to whether or not, is it a sin to miss church? And yes, it is. We're called to worship God. And so I made a question on the kids' test about that, is what is an acceptable excuse to miss church? And so I mixed it up with acceptable and unacceptable reasons, and they had to circle the ones that they knew were acceptable excuses. And there were a couple they didn't circle. There was nothing they circled that they shouldn't have. But there were two things. One child each missed something they should have circled as an acceptable reason. So in my family, if you're sick, too bad. You're going to church, apparently, according to the 11-year-old, now 12-year-old. And the 14-year-old said that being more than an hour away from any church, like if you're on vacation and the next church is more than an hour away, too bad. You're getting up early and you're driving. And I said, why didn't you circle that? And he said, because we've driven 2 hours for church before. I was like, yeah, but we're weird. So most people, you know, if you're out in the desert, you know, on a family trip or something, and there's no real good way to get to a church, then, you know, or you have a transportation issue that you can't get to a church. So those were all valid excuses. If you were sick, if you were helping somebody who had an emergency or was sick, and if you had no transportation and you couldn't arrange transportation, things like that. So unavoidable was okay, but if you are just wanting to sleep in, or there's a soccer tournament, or et cetera, then it wasn't excusable. But don't ask my kids, because they will come after you. They don't think there's any really good excuses. So be there. Have your whole family participate in all the sacraments that are appropriate and show their value to your children. So we thought, Bishop Sutton talked yesterday a little bit about the Eucharist being the absolute most important thing. Your kids need to know that. You know, we're coming to the best part in the service. It's time to get communion. And there are other sacraments that they can participate in. They can participate in confession. They can go for unction. They don't need to get married at four. They're not going to get ordained at four. confirmation whenever is age appropriate. And just making sure that these milestones are just as important as high school graduation, learning to ride a bike without training wheels, all the things you should make a big deal out of. Yay, you did it. The sacraments can be that too. Go to church even when you travel. Unless it's impossible, and then it's okay. But in the travel church, ask your children to find everything they can that is different from their home church and make a list. He who has the most or found the most obscure thing wins. So we've had a lot of fun with this, because you'll be surprised at what your kids notice. And they'll say, well, their altar is not against the wall. Wow, I didn't think you would notice something like that. Their tabernacle's off to the side instead of over here. Their stained glass windows are made differently. Little things. They keep their eternal candles somewhere else, and all different things. How many candles are lit on the altar, which should be the same but isn't always when you go places. So there's lots of differences. You know, what if they point out that the church that you're visiting isn't doing something right? Wouldn't that be cool if they knew the difference? Well, they didn't do that right. They're supposed to do this first. So, and most of all, be creative, because you can come up with all kinds of interesting things for your kids to do. You just need to do it, right? Okay, so some not free options are have Christian emblems. Wear a cross. Get your kids religious-oriented t-shirts. And I don't say this because we want to show off that we're Christians. It's not about the appearance. It's about having visual reminders of who you are and how you should act. It's a good thing. When you have a little cross hanging from your rearview mirror and you're just about to, you know, shake your fist at somebody, we'll go with shake your fist because it's the nice thing, in traffic, and then you remember, ooh, look, my fist and the cross are in the same place. Maybe I should just put my hands down and not be so angry at the other person in traffic. It changes your behavior. And if you remember that you're wearing a cross, you might change what you're doing out in public where people are looking at you, because everybody's watching for you to screw up and say, nope, that's what Christians are like. We know all about them. So wear these things as a reminder to you, but also so that you can say, I'm a Christian even when I'm not in church. And it's a reminder to you and a statement to other people. Buy Christian music for your iPod or phone and for your kids. Okay, just because your child loves rap music doesn't mean that they can't listen to rap music. Go to the Christian bookstore and get some Christian rap music. Because there's Christian rap music, heavy metal, pop, country, every genre there is, there's a Christian singer for it, and you can get music for that. So you can replace some of that Eminem with, you know, I don't know the Christian rap groups, but they exist. And I'm fixing to take my son to go pick some stuff out, because we want to replace some not great choices. So buy Bibles and religious books, or watch rummage sales, because sadly people get rid of their failed good intentions. So you can pick up extra Bibles and books that, you know, C.S. Lewis books. You can always find those. They're solid gold, but you can always find them at garage sales. Consider church camp instead of secular camp for the kids. Consider family religious camp or a pilgrimage instead of a secular vacation. Does anybody know where the REC got its start in this country? Where is it founded? Anyone? Nobody knew it yesterday either. But there's a place somewhere. Did you? It's in Pennsylvania. Okay. So take a trip to Pennsylvania to see that place. Okay? That's a family trip, and it's about your spiritual heritage, your faith, your denomination. And it's all things that are important to your kids. There's also all kinds of, you wouldn't think, you'd think Europe would be a better site for it, but there's all kinds of religious places in the United States that you can make a pilgrimage to, and, you know, make some really interesting trips. So, but it does involve some money. Get active in mission trips, because actions speak louder than words. So maybe even instead of a vacation, you're saving up for a mission trip to go help out in Central America or wherever. And then your kids can see that being something that's important to you. So here's some resources for you. The Family Time ministry is at famtime.com, and they have a lot of activities for families to do, to teach Bible lessons that come with activities. And they're really fun and very engaging, and they have them for all different age groups. And so you can go to that website and check those out. Faith at Home has both materials for churches that want to have family ministry that encourages families to do this at home, and then they also have stuff for families to use. Visionary Parenting will change your life. It's an 8-volume video set. And you can do it with your church family, or you can view them at home, and it is amazing. It will really change your thinking about what families are supposed to be doing and how. Persecution.com and kidsofcourage.com are websites where you can look up where mission work and persecution of Christians is taking place. That comes from Voice of the Martyrs, both of those sites, but the Kids of Courage is designed for children. So look for family devotions at Christian bookstores and online, and find Bibles that are age-appropriate for each of your children, and then read them together. My children have, you know, gone through various different ages and stages, so our Bible shelf is, we've got everything from, you know, board book, baby Bible, on up to the, you know, teen Bible, and everything in between. So the main thing is to start now. Regardless of where you are in the process of child rearing, start now. Just because you may have missed an age or stage or two doesn't mean that you can't still make an impact on the spiritual lives of your children, and it's never too early or too late. So, thank you. And I do have, if you are interested, a list of resources. It's Family Formation Resources. And it's books on topics such as family formation, Christian parenting for daughters, family ministry, marriage, fatherhood, motherhood, men's ministry, lots of parenting stuff. And dealing with sons and women's ministry as well. So I've got a whole big list of those if people are interested in that, and those are a good place to start for things. And I really recommend the Family Time series of books that are by Kirk Weaver that are on this list. So if people are interested in those, I can... I can email it to you. So let me... I have a clipboard here, or a pad anyway, and you can put your name and contact information and what you want from me. So if there's an area of family formation that you're particularly interested in, especially as that list goes by, that's not an exhaustive list by any stretch of the imagination. So I've got more resources and directions that I can point you in for those things. So if you see, you know, if you look at the list and you're like, wow, I'm really interested in the family ministry at church, let me know, and, you know, write that down, and I'll send you lots more resources about any given topic. So, okay. Any other questions or anything? All right. Thank you so much.